Welcome to another Radio Internet Story Exchange podcast. I'm the Rise host and producer, Kelia Ramaris. 1/8 of American women are expected to get breast cancer in their lifetimes, and while the incidence of breast cancer among men is still rare, it is growing. Science tells us that there are certain risk factors for certain cancers, for example, smoking and lung cancer, and that genetics can play a role. But maybe there's more to cancer risk than just our personal behavior or genetics. Dr. Janet Sherman, physician and toxicologist, thinks the overall incidence of cancer is growing in the United States and other parts of the world because of carcinogens, cancer-causing agents, industrial societies have placed in the environment. Dr. Sherman is the author of Life's Delicate Balance, Causes and Prevention of Breast Cancer. She says that environmental contamination contributes to the breast cancer epidemic, and that we could prevent much cancer by eliminating toxins from our environment.
Well, I think we have much greater increase in toxic chemicals, pesticides, endocrine disruptors, and we also have, since 1945, tremendous increase in nuclear radiation, first from the bomb tests that occurred in the Pacific and at the Nevada test site, and then the building of nuclear power plants across the United States. It's not any big surprise that the highest breast cancer rates are on the East Coast, and if you look at the map of the United States, which way does the wind blow? It comes from the west and the south and blows toward the northeast. And the largest concentration of nuclear power plants, of course, is in the northeast. There are hazards out there, but if you're not exposed to them, then you're not at risk. And if you can cut out the exposure by, like, for instance, not eating any fish out of the Great Lakes, which are tremendously contaminated with PCBs and other toxic chemicals, then the hazard sits there in the fish in the Great Lakes, but you're not exposed to it. But if you live next to a nuclear power plant, it's quiet, it's so-called clean. People say, well, it doesn't make any noise, there's no smoke, there's no dust coming out of it. But there's about 200 nuclear isotopes that are given off as these power plants operate. So there is a hazard, and if you live within 50 miles or so of one of these, you are exposed. So what you do there, you have to close down the hazard.
Part of the problem may very well be something you point out in the book, which is a conflict of interest in that the companies who make cancer treatments are also, in many cases, the companies who manufacture carcinogenic chemicals.
Oh, absolutely. And the pharmaceutical companies are the same who make cancer treatments are also the ones who make industrial chemicals, pesticides, and other things. And they are the ones who are making the treatments. Everybody knows about the run for the cure. And you see people wearing the little pink ribbon. But the group that sponsors the Run for the Cure is backed by ICI Zeneca. Now, Zeneca is the manufacturer of tamoxifen. Tamoxifen is a multi-million-dollar drug given to women who've had breast cancer. Now, they don't ever talk about prevention. They only talk about early detection, get a mammogram, run for the cure, and take tamoxifen. And I think this is a serious, serious problem.
You think tamoxifen itself is a carcinogen, don't you?
Well, it's not just me. I mean, the company itself that developed tamoxifen demonstrated that it was carcinogenic way early on before they ever marketed it to humans. It's not my opinion. It's the company's opinion and also the supporting data. We know, for instance, women who take tamoxifen have a higher rate of uterine cancer, but they showed that in test animals before it was marketed to women.
This is just one of a number of chemicals that scientifically showed problems but yet were marketed anyway.
That's right, as were the postmenopausal hormones. I mean, women were told to take hormones when they stopped having their menses. Well, they said, we'll take it because it prevents heart disease. Well, they've shown that it doesn't. We'll take it because it'll prevent osteoporosis. Well, studies have shown it doesn't have any effect on osteoporosis. Then they came out and said, well, it'll help prevent Alzheimer's and dementia. Well, they've showed that doesn't work either. So now we know that finally the sales of postmenopausal hormones such as Premarin and drugs like that have dropped. You know, but it took a long, long time to get this to happen.
There's another well-known chemical that has caused cancer in women, and that's DES. Talk a little bit about that.
It's called diethylstilbestrol, and it was promoted for absolutely... And I mean, just a wide variety of supposed medical problems for women, from menopause to depression. But the worst thing that happened was they decided that it would be great to give to pregnant women to prevent miscarriage. Well, unfortunately, it turned out it didn't prevent very many miscarriages, but the worst thing that happened was girls and boys born to women who took the drug during pregnancy wound up with abnormalities of their genitalia. Girls who then became mature had cancer of the cervix and the uterus, and boys displayed cancer of the testes. And this was, an experiment on humans promoted by the drug companies. And then it took years before this was stopped. The worst thing that happened with DES was that it was given for years and years and years to meat animals such as swine and beef cattle to promote growth. And then, of course, these chemicals are all in the meat supply. Now it's been stopped in the meat supply, but other hormones are given, and I haven't a clue how many there are because the data are extremely difficult to get, and they're changing all the time.
What about the pill?
That's a good question. When the pill first came out in the late 50s, early 60s, they were high-dose estrogen and progesterone, and most of the women who took those pills at that time complained of breast soreness and breast enlargement, which, of course, means that there's having a direct hormonal effect. There was data indicating that there was an increased risk of breast cancer at that time, so they dropped the doses. The pills went down in dosage, lower and lower doses. Now, the data are not real clear now that they've lowered the dose, whether there is an increased risk of breast cancer or not. It's not really well defined. But young girls, would come to me and say, would you recommend birth control pills? And I would generally say, no, I would use another method.
People are flat out saying obesity causes cancer. But really, the issue could be not fat per se, but what's in fat?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct. What is causing the weight gain is the same thing that's causing the weight gain in the animals. If you're going to be giving hormones to beef cattle and pigs to make them gain weight so you can sell them for meat, those hormones are still in the meat. So if you eat those, you're going to gain weight too. So it's not just that we're eating too much and sitting around watching the television too much. Our food supply is contaminated with hormones that produce weight gain, obesity, and height.
We've seen also a change in attitude. You mentioned it in your book, and I've seen it elsewhere, blaming the victim, that it's all about lifestyle choices. I have a friend who is a biologist. She's an alum of Columbia University in New York, and she told me that courses in Columbia about environmental factors in cancer have been replaced by courses on personal responsibility for cancer.
Oh, yes. Well, it's true. We do have to take responsibility for our own well-being. I mean, anybody who's still lighting up cigarettes these days, I think, has got to have their head examined. But still, let's look at the cancer rate in children. You can't tell me that kids are having a faulty lifestyle. They're drinking and smoking and getting and developing cancer. No, that's not true. Nor are the animals in the St. Lawrence River. I mean, the seals there with cancer, they have a perfectly normal lifestyle. A colleague of mine that I also talk about in my book and his associates collected fish from the Anacostia River, which is one of the rivers, short river, that flows into the Potomac after flowing along the east side of the city of Washington, D.C. Over 50% of the fish in that river have cancer. And I don't think their lifestyle is faulty.
Endocrine disruptors, what are those?
Those are chemicals that are fake hormones. They act like hormones in animals and humans. They're not generated as hormones. They're not produced as hormones. For instance, PCBs, polybrominated biphenyls, which were used in electrical equipment and transformers and things like that. Those act like estrogens, not only in humans, but in wild animals. We know, for instance, that the seals that inhabit the St. Lawrence River have a high rate of breast cancer. Now, those seals don't smoke and they don't drink, and their habits are really quite good, but they are loaded with PCBs. Now, a colleague of mine and her associates decided to find a place in the world where there's no factories and no industry and look at the levels of PCBs in the population. So they went up to Baffin Island, which is in the North Atlantic, and they tested people in the Inuit population, the local native people. and they found the highest PCB levels in the world, as they have also subsequently found in Greenland. Well, there's no factories up there, but the PCBs are carried in the food supply. The animal, the seals which they live on for their food, come south in the summertime and then absorb all these PCBs as they're eating fish. And then they go back north, and the native people harpoon those animals or shoot them, and they're loaded with PCBs. Much of our diet is cultural, and what we eat is things that make us comfortable. But I urge people, you know, you can get hormone-free milk, which is very, very wise to do, but you're not sure if you're getting radiation-free milk, because if the dairy is near a nuclear power plant, then you're not getting radiation-free milk. You may be getting hormone-free milk. I urge people to try as much as they can to substitute soy milk, rice milk, kinds of things. People say, well, I don't like the taste. Well, you can make a milkshake using a banana and some rice milk or soy milk and some ice cubes, and it's delicious and it doesn't have a lot of calories.
But how do I know that the rice or the soy isn't full of radiation?
Well, it's less likely, because the radiation is mostly in the calcium. It travels with calcium. For instance, the biggest concern we have is the strontium 90 that's in the milk supply. The work that I've done with the Radiation Public Health Group has shown that proximity to nuclear power plants, you have an increased incidence of cancer, and then you have increased levels of strontium 90 in the teeth of children who are born in those areas. So we know that the strontium is traveling through. You can't see it, you can't smell it, can't taste it. It's precipitated out by rain. It goes on the grass. The cattle eat it, or they eat the hay. So it's important to cut back dairy as much as possible if you're concerned about your risk. Many, many cultures do just fine with eating legumes, you know, beans and peas and things like that, without eating meat. If you don't want to give up meat completely, I would say use it mostly for flavoring. Oriental cooking uses a small amount of meat with a lot of vegetables. A little bit of meat gives it some flavor, and the vegetables give you nourishment and fill you up, and you eat less meat.
The thought comes through my mind, especially my generation, born during the era of above-ground testing, that maybe we've done so much damage already, we might as well eat the meat and enjoy it because it's too late.
It's not too late, because you can lower your level of hormones and chemicals. They've clearly shown people, for instance, who've worked with PCBs or chlordane or heptachlor or those other toxic chemicals, that they've shown that exercise and time and a clean diet does lower those levels over a short period of time. You can lower the levels.
What would you like to see on a policy level?
I'd certainly like to see that we phase out nuclear power. I'd like to see on a policy level that the money that has gone into nuclear power and into the development of the Yucca Mountain repository and tremendous amount of money into nuclear armaments be used to promote solar energy and wind power and conservation. We haven't heard the word conservation since Mr. Carter was president. I'd like to see for policy that people stop, or that they tax out of existence, the huge automobiles and vehicles that are on our highways, and that promote people to use small, energy-efficient cars and trucks.
Do you think automobile emissions play a role in breast cancer?
Well, yes, particularly when you're talking about the pollutants. Obviously, you have to refine these fuels someplace. The refinery may not be in your backyard, but it's in somebody's backyard.
You've been listening to physician and toxicologist Dr. Janet Sherman speaking about environmental causes of cancer. Her book, Life's Delicate Balance, Causes and Prevention of Breast Cancer, was published in 2000, but is unfortunately out of print. Perhaps a victim of the publishing industry's tendency to prematurely remainder, that is, stop supporting, books by women authors. You can get more information on cancer prevention by visiting Dr. Sherman's website, janetsherman.com. That's JANETTESHERMAN.com. I'm The Rise host and producer, Kelia Ramirez. My email address is kellia@rise4news.net. That's Kellia@rise4news.net. This has been a Radio Internet Story Exchange podcast. Thanks for listening.